Let's do this!
A swing and a belt. Left field. Way back. Blue Jays win it.
Oh, God. Down the sideline. Wow. Touchdown.
Unbelievable.
Trying to finish it.
It's over. It's over.
Here's a chance. That goal. Shot rebound.
How's it going, everybody? Matt Robinson back here with you in the Tall Can Audio Studios here in beautiful Bytown, Canada. We're on Twitter and Instagram at Tall Can Audio, Facebook.com/Tall Can Audio. If you want to follow along with the shows there, we'd love to interact with you. Make sure you give us a follow. Great show today, guys. I can't tell you how excited I am for this one. This has been somebody that I have badly wanted to have on for a very long time. Was always a little bit hesitant to reach out, but turns out I shouldn't have been. But, you know, maybe it takes a global pandemic to get these people to have a little bit of time for you with sports on the back burner. Chris Cuthbert is here today. The man in Canadian sports play-by-play. The voice of the CFL and the Grey Cup, certainly on TSN. Regional games on TSN, as well as all kinds of national calls that he had back when TSN had the national rights for the National Hockey League. Saying national a lot there. Also, back in the day on CBC, people will remember him calling Labatt's Blue Jays baseball. In the Olympics, we've done kayaking, canoeing, rowing, figure skating. The guy can do it all. And I don't think there's anybody better at it. We're not going to wait around too long here. Chris doesn't do a ton of these. He was super generous with his time. I couldn't have been any more grateful to him for giving us the amount of time he did and some really thoughtful answers and interesting discussion. So he has been my favorite play-by-play guy for a very long time now. I enjoyed him on CBC. I was actually kind of happy when he moved to TSN just because it looked like CBC was sort of downgrading CBC Sports and the amount of things that they were going to be able to cover. So when he moved to TSN, they ended up with all the national CFL rights, tons of hockey, all kinds of things. Certainly the voice of the golden goal, Sidney Crosby, Vancouver 2010. You're a fool if you think I was able to resist the urge to ask him about all of that. That will be in the conversation as well. So we're going to get to Chris right now. Make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening right now, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you are. Hit that follow button, hit the subscribe button. We are going to keep the good stuff coming for you. One last thing. If you haven't had the chance yet, if you're new to the show and Chris has brought you in, God love him for doing that, go back just a couple of episodes. We had James Duthie on the show. It's called Tall Can Sports 412 is the episode number. His name's right there in the title, so you can't miss it. He was also a really fun guest, the face of all of Canada's big sporting events now. He has become the guy, sort of replacing Brian Williams, maybe sort of replacing Ron McLean, whoever you kind of associate in that role. It's sort of become James Duthie over the years. He gave us about an hour of his time as well. We had a great conversation with him. If you haven't had the chance, it is on the podcast feed, wherever you're listening to this, or hit up tallcanaudio.com. With that out of the way, let's get right to it. It's TSN's Chris Cuthbert on the Tall Can Audio Podcast Network. As promised, pleased to welcome Chris Cuthbert from TSN. How are you doing today?
I'm good to be with you, Matt. We're all hanging in, I guess. I hope we are.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's maybe the first question that I should be leading off with. I know traditionally you'd be kind of getting ready for the CFL season. You'd be calling Stanley Cup playoff games. What are you keeping busy with now?
Well, not a whole lot. Just trying to get a routine and just keep the mind occupied. Probably watching too much TV like everybody else. Getting a little bit of exercise, and that's about all. But you're right. This is actually usually one of my favorite times of the year. There's not much better than covering the Stanley Cup playoffs, and I'd just be winding down. And you're right. After a week or two, we'd be sinking our teeth, actually maybe getting right into preseason action. Yeah. Because the schedule is a little been moved up the last year or two, but fun kind of sinking my teeth into football and starting the prep to get into CFL season as well.
You're going to be a little bit of a test here for me, I guess. I got to tell you, when we normally do these shows, we've had some of the local TSN guys, some of your other colleagues who, when they pass through Ottawa or are based here, we can get them to come in studio. And one of the things that we will normally do, and certainly when it's just my regular co-host and I, is try one of a new local craft beer. And that's how we bribe half of the local guys to come into the studio, is that we'll provide that. And lately, we've been doing most of these remotely. We've had James Myrtle on. Last week, we had James Duthie come on. And my listeners are starting to give me crap, Chris, that I'm not asking people if they're into the craft beer scene at all. And so I'm going to throw it out to you. I have no idea whether you're a beer guy at all, but they're on me. I got to ask you, are you a craft beer guy at all?
Okay, well, then I'm going to disappoint. I've never been a huge craft beer guy. I certainly like my beer, yeah, but not as adventurous as a lot of people. And as you get a little older and the bladder doesn't work quite as well, I've become more of a wine guy after games, just so I can sleep through the night. So a little glass of red has become the post-game beverage of choice.
Do you have a brewery? See, I'm stuck. This is where I live, I guess, is the brewery world. Do you have a winery? Anything that I can throw out to our guys? Anything you prefer?
I'm not an expert, so you know what, I'm still dabbling, and I've been getting into Pinot Noirs. My hockey producer is Italian, so if he's ordering after a game, it's a Chianti. But and Ferraro likes a little heavier, so if it's a meal, he's probably ordering the Barolo. But we try to keep everybody happy, and usually a good glass of wine keeps everybody happy.
Fair enough. So there you go, listeners. We tried it.
But I'll plug Chris Phillips' beer anytime just because he's a good guy.
Yeah, well, we've had some of his stuff. The Big Rig Brewery here in town, they make some really nice stuff. So I guess maybe if you don't mind, we could do like a quick spin through kind of how you found your way to where you are, kind of your background, how you broke into the business maybe.
Well, my start wasn't too far away from you, in Kingston at Queens. I was going to Queens and thinking about being a high school history teacher, but nobody was hiring teachers in the late 70s. And I realized pretty quickly that, I'd have to have an alternative plan. And I thought, if there's no guarantee of a job, why don't I try to do what I'd really love to do? And that'd be a sportscaster. Some of your listeners might remember the name Max Jackson, who was a legend in Kingston, and I went to Max, and Max was the voice of the Kingston Canadians at the time, so it does go back a long ways. Max did morning radio, noon radio, supper television sports, and then he'd do the Kingston Canadians broadcast when they were playing. So he was on morning, noon, and night.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and he gave me my first chance. I covered the Queens Golden Gales in 1978 when they won the Vanier Cup. That was my first year at at Queens Radio. They won the Vanier Cup, and I did some reports for Max. I also sent a report to the biggest radio station at the time in Toronto, CFRB.
Oh wow! Yeah.
And back then, Dave Hodge would do 10-minute sportscast. This is pre-TSN, and the biggest sportscasts in Toronto were at 6:40 and 11:20 at night. And although Dave Hodge didn't run the one I sent in, it was the late night fella. And when he ran my report on a Queens Golden Gales football victory, 45-second report, when that made it to air, it gave me that tank of gas to think, you know what, maybe I can do this. Yeah. So that was the start.
So you end up doing some work, obviously, on Hockey Night very early on. You're more of a Western host to start before you're doing play-by-play. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. I was hired when John Wells went to TSN. John Wells was a CBC host out of CBC Edmonton, and he went to TSN. Peter Watts also was at CBC Edmonton. He went to TSN. So there was a job opening, and I'll back up a little bit because this is how crazy the world of media can work. I've had any number of great breaks. I started in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, the voice of the Yorkton Terriers, and I got that job because a college buddy of mine who went to McMaster had put an ad in a trade paper looking for work, and they asked him to send his play-by-play tapes, but they never did play-by-play it back. So he gave the response to me, and he said, why don't you send your play-by-play tape in? And I ended up getting a job there.
Oh, wow.
Well, that job had many, many moons earlier been held by Kurt Kilback, who was then, by the 80s, the voice of the Winnipeg Jets. And I guess going through Yorkton, he heard me and had a friend in Montreal who was looking for a kind of a junior reporter for CJAD in Montreal who might not cost a lot of money. And Kurt, although he didn't know me, had heard about this young guy who was from the East, had been at Yorkton, had moved back East because I went back to Kingston. And he said, why don't you get in touch with this guy? And so they reached out. And so that was lucky break number two. All of a sudden, I'm covering the Montreal Canadiens and the Expos and the Alouettes. And a year later, I was the voice of the Montreal Concords and the Montreal Manic of the North American Soccer League,
oh, wow.
which is the next stroke of great luck, because the Manic were owned by Molson Brewery. And Molson Brewery owned the production house that was Hockey Night in Canada.
Right, okay.
And in 1981, Danny Gallivan retired, Bill Hewitt retired, and they were looking for new talent, and somebody connected with the soccer team, or Molson in Montreal, had passed my name along. So by covering the North American Soccer League, I got a foot in the door with Hockey Night in Canada, and I was a host, as you mentioned, out west by 1984.
It's wild that the North American Soccer League is how you end up at Hockey Night in Canada.
It really is crazy. and by the way, I did host more than I probably called games for the first few years, but my very first appearance on Hockey Night in Canada was as a play-by-play guy for a regional game involving Calgary and Quebec. And to be honest with you, it was the fulfillment of a career dream. It was, you know, looking back on it, maybe what should have been the biggest day of my career. And yet I think it was so overwhelming. I really remember almost none of what happened in that game. So I've never seen it, never heard it. Got some decent feedback from Ralph Mellenby, who was the boss then.
Yeah.
But he wasn't overwhelmingly complimentary, because what he was looking for with the young guys was a new approach to doing play-by-play. And he wanted more conversation, less of the traditional call. And I gave him a traditional call.
Right.
And although he thought that was okay, he reminded me that wasn't really what he was looking for. And I think when you listen to games now, there is a difference between what you hear now than what you used to hear. And you could still open it up for a pretty good debate on whether or not the traditional style is the best. I was thinking about that watching the 87 Canada Cup replay the other day, that Dan Kelly, who's one of my heroes, and I would argue he and Danny Gallivan are the best who ever did it. And it struck me at how traditional Dan Kelly's call is, and yet how I found it how easy a listen it is. So now you get a lot more interaction between the play-by-play man and the analyst in the game. I think there is more information, and I think there's a lot of pluses to that. But the old Bob Cole, Danny Gallivan, Dan Kelly straight call, and I use a phrase, I shouldn't use it, because I think nothing but the highest of those men, but that style is in our business sometimes frowned on and called a bingo call. But I still think there's a place for a good bingo call when you've got the best bingo callers in the world.
I completely agree with that. If somebody is good at what they do, then let them do it. I think you give them a little space there. And I guess you mentioned there your first full play-by-play call. That was going to be my next question. I'd heard tell, and maybe I'm mistaken, and you'll clear this up for me, that your first play-by-play call was never supposed to happen. It came from a power outage in Montreal. Is the
that is maybe the most significant night of my career, and it's always framed as my first play-by-play call. That's not true. I had done quite a few. I probably would do a half dozen a year for hockey night. Again, I was mostly. Every week I'd be the host, but right. they sprinkled in a little play-by-play, and I was always anxious to do more.
Well, I was born in 83, so my memory's sketchy around that time.
No, but everybody says that. Your first game was 1988,
right.
and I'll give the date, April 18th, 1988, was pretty special, though, because I volunteered. I was hosting the Edmonton Calgary playoff series in the first round, mm-hmm. but I knew that they were... Back then, not all the games were televised in the playoffs, which
right.
I think would surprise a lot of people to hear now. And Hockey Night decided they wanted to deal with a few of the lesser profile series by doing intermission hits into those games. But everybody was pretty well working, and whoever wasn't maybe didn't have as much play-by-play experience. So they were looking for somebody that could do some play-by-play during the intermissions of a series between New Jersey and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered, even though I was on the alternate nights going to be in Alberta, but they decided to fly me back and forth because was game. And the first night I did the game one, Edmonton, Calgary, flew east to Washington and then had to get to Landover, Maryland, which is a little outside of, wouldn't have been a lot easier to be down at where the Caps play now,
for but sure, yeah.
it was Landover, and midway through the first period of a game that I was supposed to do maybe 2 or 3 minutes of play-by-play in both intermissions, they came to me and said, start calling it. So I did, without a color man, through to my first commercial and thought, are we still on the air? And I had one producer with me, and he said, we're coming back at a commercial, keep going. And I kept going for the next 2 hours, doing the play-by-play, the color, and hosting the intermissions.
Wow.
And it was the most fly-by-the-seat-of-my-pants night of my career.
Galley and Danico get their sticks up. Danico, the leading penalty man on the Devils this year, he's a rough customer. But they are separated quickly by Gerard Gauthier, and now they're going at it again. Well, we talked with Greg Smith earlier that tempers are usually kept in check between these two teams, but there you see Danico in the midst of it and Gary Galley. But I'm not sure anything will come of it, although as I say that, Danico and Galley kind of step up the tempo here. It looks like Gauthier and Hodges have this under control. From Washington, this is the Stanley Cup playoffs on CBC.
And I remember when both of us left Landover after the game, we kind of asked each other whether or not our careers had just come to an end, because it was pretty overwhelming, and you're not sure what exactly is happening. But the reason they came to me is the game that night nationally was Boston and Montreal, which would have been obviously a high-profile
game.
Sure,
yeah.
And all of Quebec got hit by a power failure. And so the ability to for the TV transmission out of the Forum that night was impossible. And what I didn't understand is at times during my broadcast, I was given scoring updates, and I thought, I'm telling people what the score in Boston and Montreal is, and they're probably losing their minds that the game's going on and they can't watch it.
Yeah.
And even from my perspective, I didn't have time to really appreciate why this was all happening and what the issues were. But as it turned out, that power failure in Quebec was one of the great turning points in my career, because after that, I did a lot fewer games as a host and many more as a play-by-play announcer.
Sure. Maybe one of the last broadcasts you'd see of one man doing it, right? We very rarely see that. And to be able to carry that all by yourself is, man, I'm sure that sent some signals up the chain of command that this guy's probably pretty good.
Well, I don't want to do it again, that's for sure. I appreciate more now the analyst than ever before. But sure. I thought back afterwards that it was like going back to Yorkton, Saskatchewan, because in the SJHL, and I'm sure a lot of WHL, and I don't know the number of major junior announcers that have to do the games by themselves anymore, but it used to be more common.
Sure.
And even at the NHL level, I think even Chuck Caton up until a few years ago in Carolina called the games on radio by himself.
Wow, okay.
So it wasn't that unusual, but it certainly was for a television broadcast of a playoff game in the 80s, and fortunately I survived it.
So you end up, working your way up the chain at CBC. For the longest time, you are, respectfully, the number two man behind Bob Cole. Lots of conference finals, things like that, before moving over to TSN in early 2005. Is that right?
2005, that's right.
So at that point, you're going to become, as TSN picks up all the rights to the CFL, you are the number one guy there on the CFL. I believe you followed John Wells again.
That's strangely enough. I have followed in his shadow quite a bit.
And since then, you've been the voice of the CFL in Canada, every Grey Cup. There's all kinds of, certainly, I'm sure you get asked about the 2010 Olympics all the time, calling. There will never be a bigger sports broadcast in this country in terms of ratings than what we saw that day in Vancouver. I got you on the line. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. We don't have to spend a ton of time here, but what do you remember of that kind of gold medal Sunday? What maybe you had prepared of that famous, the golden goal call, these sorts of things. What are your kind of memories of that Sunday in Vancouver?
Well, I'll back up to a day or two before.
By all means.
And just got to meet, through Doc Emmerich, I think it was the semifinals of the third place game. And Al Michael showed up at the rink, and through Doc Emmerich, we got to meet Al for the first time. And he's one of the guys I respect most in the business, football-wise, everything. And, as a kid calling games for the first year in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, I watched Lake Placid live on a black and white portable in my $160 a month apartment in Yorkton, Saskatchewan, and I thought, man, that could you ever conceive of in your career having a moment even close to that?
19 seconds. Johnson over to Ramsey. Vigilantinov gets checked by Ramsey. McClanahan is there. The puck is still loose. 11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game.
Over.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
And I consider that call the greatest call I've heard in broadcasting. And finally, 30 years later, got to tell Al Michaels that. And I remember saying to him that we will never have a call like you had in 1980. But boy, would it be nice if we would have a game that we could remember. In even close to that.
And so this is just before you call the gold medal Canada-USA game.
And not ever anticipating that was possible.
Wow.
So that, I did think of a million things to say leading into that Olympic tournament and that game. And it's very strange, but for whatever reason, I never thought about overtime.
Right.
Ever. And that was a noon game. And in Vancouver, and I had not slept much the night before, just being on edge by what was going to be the biggest call of my career.
Right.
And everything was going great, and then it goes to overtime, and I found like I was starting to lose my alertness in the intermission, and I even went on a radio interview in the intermission just to kind of keep my brain in it. And I remember Ray Ferraro looking at me like, "You got to be kidding me! You're going down to do that radio interview before overtime," and I thought I just got to keep in it. And while I was playing some mental mind games, I thought, you know, if this was soccer, the next goal would be the golden goal. And I kind of had that, you know, eureka moment thinking, oh, that is good. I've got to use that. And, you know, maybe it would have been obvious to almost everybody else anyway. But for me, I was just not feeling quite as sharp as I should have. And to come up with that at that point was, I thought, yep, that's what's going to happen.
Niedermeyer regroups. Crosby over the line. Sidney Crosby can't bust in. Up with it again. He's on the ice with Aginla. Aginla. Crosby! Sidney Crosby! The golden goal! And Canada has once in a lifetime Olympic gold!
Now, I don't know if I would have said it the same way or said it at all if the United States had scored the golden goal, but because it wouldn't have been as golden for all of Canada.
And it's kind of a crazy call because it's such a crazy goal. Like, you don't expect Ryan Miller, the way he's playing in that tournament, to get beat from there. And so it's kind of like Crosby gets it and, oh my God, it's in. And all of a sudden you still have the presence of mind in that moment to make that call on top of this kind of strange goal. Like, it's really an incredible.
Yeah, it was a strange goal, and any play-by-play guy wants that goal to be clean, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, sure. And I wasn't happy with the fact it wasn't as clean a call as it could have been. I felt like it was a beat slow, although when I watched it, I mean, my sense when it happened was that I was way behind it, but you know, you're in the moment that it comes out a little bit differently. The funny thing is I always cringe when I hear it because you lose the context of the moment when you hear it 100 times years later. But I was a little over the top, and my excitement got the best of me, and midway through the call, the audio board just peaked out from the noise in the building, and my headset went dead for about a split second. And I literally had time to think, you've got to be kidding me. Biggest moment of my career, and they've shut my headset off. So there might be more panic in the voice than excitement at one little stage of it, because I did think maybe you weren't hearing anything I was saying at that point, but I've always said if there's a moment that's bigger than that in my career, I can't wait to experience it. But I don't expect that.
That's the call that people remember the most. But not too long after, and I don't want to butcher it or anything, but you say something along the lines of these golden games have their crowning moment. And to me, that's almost as iconic because it puts this into the context of those Olympics, right? Going into that gold medal hockey game, Canada has also cleaned up in all kinds of other sports. And if they win this hockey game, we will set the record for number of gold medals for a host nation. And so to me, that call a couple of seconds later, or that comment, you know, a little while later, is almost as important. I know people remember the golden goal call because why wouldn't you? But man, just an incredible way to put this into context. Yes, Canada's won gold in hockey, which is the thing we care the most about, but it's also wrapped up these 2 weeks almost perfectly, right?
Like, well, it's funny because I thought about it beforehand that, you know, it's been an amazing game. It did get off to a rocky start.
It did.
For a day or two, there was no momentum, and then all of a sudden, it's and I remember there was that sense in Vancouver that things were going wrong. It wasn't happening the way it was supposed to. Is this going to be a disaster? I mean, that for a couple of days there was a little bit of a dark cloud.
Yep.
But all of a sudden, I don't know when it turned. It, for me, it felt like when John Montgomery won gold and walked through. And I don't know what craft beer he likes, but when he had that pitcher of beer, I felt like Canada had hit its stride. And, you know, but what I was going to say is how would we have viewed the 2010 Olympics if Team Canada hadn't won gold in men's hockey? It wouldn't have been fair to say it wouldn't have been the same, but it wouldn't have been the same.
That's right.
And it was the cherry on top, and it was the very last event, and it couldn't have ended on a bigger high.
Well, you're right, because that night that you're referring to with John Montgomery is also the night that Canada beats Russia in the quarterfinal. Kaylee Humphreys and her partner, whose name now I can't believe escapes me, we have all kinds of luck that night at the bobsled track. John Montgomery's doing, and things, like you say, seem to be building and snowballing, and all of a sudden it all culminates with this one hockey game. But James Duthie said the same thing a week or so ago when he was on, that I wonder how we remember those games if the last thing, that big men's hockey game, goes the other way and, you know, the Americans somehow win it. Because just before that Crosby goal, the Americans have a great chance at to finish it. So
You know, I had a chat with Ron Wilson a few months afterwards. He was coaching the Leafs, and I used to get 5-10 minutes to talk to him prior to any Leaf game, and that one day in particular, I think it was our last broadcast of the year, and as I was leaving, he said, he asked me something about the gold medal game, and he said, he kind of opened the opportunity to just shoot the breeze about that, and I remember, I forget the player who shot the puck, but
I do too.
From his eye line,
I think it was Pavelski.
I was going to say Joe Pavelski.
Yeah.
From his eye line, he thought the puck was going in the net, and said that Luongo had reacted differently than normally how a goaltender would shrug or whatever. And by that unusual reaction to it, he made a save that stopped the Americans from winning. But you mentioned the Russia game, and I always consider that I got to call two gold medal games, because the Russian team going into the tournament was, I thought, the team to beat.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be Russia-Canada, and it was unbelievable to me that in the quarterfinals, one of those two teams was going to go out.
It was crazy.
And the tension that night was palatable, because Canada could have gone away not just with silver, they could have gone away with no medal
right.
at all.
Yes.
And they came out of the blocks and steamrolled a great Russian team.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that first period. It was like an avalanche, and they just rolled right over what should have been a great Russian team. And that was that for me was certainly not as memorable as the gold, but that ranks right up there.
Well, you know, while we're talking about that Russia game, to me, my lasting memory from that game, like you said, Canada's pouring it on in the first period. I can't remember if it's maybe the fourth goal that Brendan Morrow scores from behind the net. And most people don't even remember that Brendan Morrow was on that team. But he's behind the net by himself, and Canada has been dominating, and he just makes this move out from behind the net and tucks it in himself. It almost reminds me of that Gilmore goal against Curtis Joseph years ago.
Here's Morrow again. To the front. The ball comes down. It's goal! Brendan Morrow!
And you're just like, man, this team is not going to be stopped, right? Like, what a great play. And from the second...
Funny, my memory is of the Rick Nash goal. Kind of on a rush, and when he scored that, I thought, wow, this is over.
Three, Team Canada, players to the attack. Rick Nash scores!
And you know, I remember the reaction the next day was everybody thought, what a great game. Boy, that second half of the game was boring.
Yes.
But what a great game, because Canada put it away and they were really never pushed in that game. I think a lot of people, I didn't call the game, Gord Miller did, but I think many people forget the save Luongo made off the late Pavel Dimitra in the dying seconds of the semifinal game. And if Luongo I don't know if Luongo made a brilliant stop or whether Demetra just rolled it wide when he had an open net, but in the dying seconds of that game, Slovakia came very close to tying it, and man, the stage might not have been set as well as as we end up remembering it.
Well, there's so many moments that that have to kind of go your way, I guess, to set it up. My buddy always he always tells me he had moved out to BC for a year or so. He's like, I gotta go to at least a game, and he just bought, because it was the only thing available, one of those play-in games. And he never expected Canada to be in it, but they end up losing to the U.S., and all of a sudden he's holding a ticket to Canada-Germany that he never expected to be a Canada game. And, of course, they walked over Germany or whatever. But, you know, just those sorts of it's circumstance, right? And the path clears a little different than you expect, and all of a sudden you wipe out the Russians, and the Slovaks make you play right to the bitter end. Like, they were a total game.
When you talk about that tournament, it's really unfair not to mention the Germany game, because that team needed time to come together, and it was almost a blessing in disguise that they got to play the extra game and to play Germany. And you're right, they did face elimination, but they weren't going to lose to that German team. But they needed another 60 minutes together, it seemed, and they carried the momentum from that into the Russian game, and it was a difference maker, to be sure.
That's true. That's something that we don't talk a whole lot about now. To move off of Vancouver, you have we know you most for your NHL calls and your CFL calls, but I can remember going back a long way. I know I've seen you do Labatt's Blue Jays baseball on the CBC back in the day. Figure skating. You'll correct me if I'm wrong. I remember you doing canoe and kayak at, was it maybe the 96 games?
Actually, 96 I did rowing.
Okay, yeah.
2000 and 2004 I called rowing and canoe and kayak. And one of my career highlights is, I called gold medals for Marnie McBean,
yeah.
Kathleen Heddle in 96. Disappointment in 2000, thought we were going to call a gold medal for Carolyn Brunet, and that was on the last day of the Olympics, and it was a very bad wind, or it was a windy day, and for flat water racing you the conditions have to be, the water has to be flat. It was wavy, and they delayed all day, because usually you're in the morning when conditions are better. Well, it was blowing up bad early in that day. We waited almost till 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, if memory serves me right. And all these athletes had to wait all day, didn't know when the event was going to be, couldn't eat because they might be told 30 minutes later,
right,
okay, we're ready to go. And Brunet, who was the heavy favorite, who'd never lost a race, ended up in terrible conditions that they shouldn't have raced in, didn't win that day, and that was very disappointing. But the highlight for me was in 2004 in Athens, and Adam Van Cuverden won in the kayak in the 500-meter event, and that was a big thrill for me, because I was under the impression he was favored to win gold in an earlier race, the 1,000 meters. He didn't win, and I thought, well, the rowing had been disappointing. Our men were defending world champions, and they kind of fell apart in Athens, and it was going to be another, it felt like a competition where there wasn't going to be a high moment. And then Vancouverden at 8 in the morning on what I think was the last day of the kayak competition won gold. And I remember him pulling me out of my seat with that call of V for victory, and that was
Adam Vancouverden, a bronze medalist yesterday, and Vancouverden's going to bring it all. V for victory, Olympic gold, unbelievable. Adam Vancouverden.
Very cool moment for me to not only call the race, but then take off the headset, run down to the area where they would come across for an interview, and got to interview him live and welcome him kind of to the shore as an Olympic champion, which was a great highlight. So yeah, with CBC, I got to call a lot of different sports. I think 13 or 14 different sports.
Wow.
I called a Canadian gold medal in synchronized swimming in 1988. And don't ask me how you call synchronized swimming, right, because I still haven't figured that out. But Soleil and Peltier won gold in Salt Lake City. I've called Vancouverden and hockey gold. And I'm trying to think, there's one and rowing gold. So five different sports I've called Canadian Olympic gold. So that's something I take a lot of pride in.
Well, I've got to tell you, and you know, sucking up, maybe it is a little bit, when my co-host and I, you know, every now and then these different polls come out online and whatever, your favorite broadcasters for this or best play-by-play guy at that, we don't blink at all. It's Chris Cuthbert. I've seen you dropped into a pile of different sports, and you never seem like you're out of your element. And I wonder, I guess maybe in two different ways, if we exclude the NHL and the CFL, which of those other sports that you've done did you find the most challenging to prepare for, and which maybe did you find to be your favorite? Like, this is a ton of fun outside of what I normally do.
Well, you know, the toughest one to prepare for, I think of one that I did a little bit, was maybe my first assignment for an Olympics was in 1988. I mentioned the synchronized swimming, mm-hmm. but my main task in South Korea was gymnastics. And gymnastics is a three-ring circus. And there was a lot for me to get up to speed in, because I was not, it was not something I grew up watching, but I had to learn, and there's six different disciplines for women, and I'm trying to think off the top of my head how many for men, but it was really rewarding to call what turned out to be a memorable event in 88. We didn't have Nadia Comăneci, but we had Daniela Silovaș, who was the Romanian star, against Elena Shushanova, who was the Russian star, and these two 5 foot 100 pound athletes went toe to toe like it was Ali Frazier.
Wow.
And the fact that I got to sit beside Elfie Schlegel, who was the consummate professional as a broadcaster, and somebody I've always had great respect for. She didn't get to go to the Olympics herself because of the boycott in 1980, but she carried me through 88, and I have fond memories of that. And surprisingly, I got a huge kick out of covering figure skating, because my first exposure to it was in 88 in Calgary, and they sent me over to interview Brian Orser after the showdown against Brian Boitano in the men's event. And back then access was different, and I remember Boitano going out for his skate, and this was the showdown, Battle of the Bryans, yes, and that was the most anticipated event in Calgary, was the Battle of the Bryans.
Yeah.
And CBC sent me over to do the interview, and I stood in an area where the interview would be done, and I was 10 feet away from Brian Orser warming up, and behind the curtain was Boitano skating. And I was shaking like a leaf, thinking, how can Orser go beyond that curtain onto the ice with the nerves and the tension and the pressure that is involved in this moment? And then Boitano skating clean. And you're thinking, in hockey, you know, to get the nerves out, you can take a run at a guy, sure, and get a hit in or whatever. There's none of that. You've got to find a perfect kind of zen spot between aggression and calm. And here was Orser, who was almost perfect, just turned slightly out of a landing and ended up winning silver. But my appreciation for figure skating went through the roof that night. And I covered 92, 98, and 2002.
2002 had its own drama, right? Skating rink. Yeah,
completely. But every Olympics in figure skating has provided some spectacular skates. I'm amazed at the way some of these athletes rise to, because we would cover the Europeans, and some of the events prior to it, but at the Olympics, the Olympic champions just found a way to take their performances to a completely different level. And I really was blown away by their ability to deliver. And Sally and Pelche were in that category for sure. I mean, that was an enormous showdown that they were in, and somehow it was peak performance at the right time. And I don't know if your listeners will remember, but they were involved in a collision with their Russian rivals in the warm-up.
Yeah.
And Jamie Salet took a hit that I think some hockey players would have taken the rest of the night off. And within minutes after this huge collision, no pads, she gets up and skates out onto the ice and delivers the performance for a lifetime, and then gets robbed by the French judge and the judging fiasco. And so that wasn't just the performance, that was the reaction afterwards, the chaos, the two or three days of controversy. It was everything. Mm-hmm. And the one thing about figure skating is, and I love about sports in general, is you get to know the personalities.
Yeah.
And one of the first people I remember, athletes that I ended up interviewing was, I started in 91 at the Worlds, and it was a sweep by the American women. And one of the women on the podium was Donya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan. And so, 3 years before all of that went down, you were kind of on the ground floor of that rivalry. So there was so much in skating, that made it far more interesting than I ever would have imagined.
Sure. You know what? I got to ask you, I wonder, as we bring it back around to hockey briefly, after the national rights shift from TSN to Sportsnet, I think most, people who follow the industry, at least as much as I do, still believed that the TSN broadcast was still clearly the best, with the panel that they had between you and Gord Miller on play-by-play. Ray Ferraro is clearly the best in the business at what he does. I wonder what your preparation is like. Suddenly you shift to doing a lot of regional games, but you also move and start doing some stuff for NBC nationally down there during the playoffs especially. And it never seems like you don't have the enthusiasm. I wonder, when you prepare for a game, are you aware of the audience that you're doing it for? And I guess, just before you answer, for our listeners, when Chris does an Ottawa Senators regional game, that's a very directed audience. You are now the hometown regional play-by-play guy for the Senators. But some of your calls on, I've seen some Western Conference playoff games and overtime goals and stuff, and your emotion is every bit the same, and it's never over the top, but it expresses the perfect amount of, this is a huge moment. And I wonder how much you pay attention to a specific audience that you're about to call this game for before you go into it, or do you always just kind of call the game the same way?
Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity and lucky to do. I always, it's a line my son rolls his eyes because he's heard it way too often, and I use it too much, but I always say to people, it beats working for a living. Mm-hmm. I love what I do, and if you're going to sit down for 3 hours and watch a game, I know you're watching the players, I know you're watching your team, but if I can make that viewing experience 1% better, then I've done my job, and I'm I think all of us at TSN, I'm not going to say we tried harder, but I think it hurt that we lost the national rights.
Yeah.
And I think
it hurt a lot of us, Chris.
we rededicated ourselves to, we're still going to do it as well as we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you this, and I'm not pandering to your audience. The Hamburglar run, and that playoff run by the Senators is, one of my career highlights. It's those games were so good, so exciting, and you're not doing your job if you're not, I was going to say jumping out of the booth, and I was on certain nights of that run. One of my highlight games was to be down in the final week when they had to run the table, to be down 3-0 to Pittsburgh and Sidney Crosby, and to come back and win that game in overtime is just, you know, that's on my short list of games that I love to call.
Right.
And I know they nailed it down in Philadelphia with the matinee game on the Saturday, and Stone scored again to clinch that. But for me, that win against Pittsburgh, although there were so many highlights and so many games that we were wowed by Andrew Hammond and just Carlson coming up with big plays and Mark Stone again. And mm-hmm. It just seemed like different heroes all the time. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. And maybe because that was a playoff run, my favorite time of the year is playoffs. And I'm very grateful that NBC gave me the opportunity to get two rounds of playoff in even when we not lost the national rights in Canada. So that was a void that I might have had a lot of trouble filling, but NBC helped. And so grateful for that. And you do tailor your call a little bit, but what I was going to say, and I should say, is nobody ever talked to us about how we should handle Leaf regional or Senator regional games. Mm-hmm. And I think what we did was, at least I've tried to do it, is and maybe deserve some criticism for it, is we approached it as if we were doing a national game. And maybe fans in the local markets expected or want more of a homer call, and I don't think any of us have done it. I mean, we lean towards the storylines of the Senators, but And we certainly get excited by, you know, Senator success when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever said, you guys got to be a homer broadcast now or don't be a homer broadcast. And I think all of us just kind of carried what we do. I mean, I've been calling games on a national level since 1984 and probably have approached most of it the same way and never really done the regional stuff as much. So, maybe I should have thought more about it at the local level. And I think in the last year, maybe we've, instead of dwelling on all the negatives that have happened, we've tried to accentuate the positive of the kids and the development and whatever, and maybe talk more about the opposing team because, you know, the losing has been repetitive, but, I think going forward, it's going to be pretty exciting calling the Ottawa Senators again, and a lot of the markets across Canada right now seem to be on the uptick. I mean, it's just about every city in Canada has some reason for optimism.
Absolutely,
NHL wise.
I think that's a great point. I'm a Leaf guy here in the nation's capital, right? So I'm in enemy territory here a lot of the time. But obviously, we get a lot of Sens coverage. And I think back to a year or two ago, there's a terrific Bobby Ryan goal when the Sens are long out of it. But you capture it perfectly, and he beats the defenseman, he comes in and he scores, and you hit one of your famous calls that did you see that?
Bobby Ryan back in. What a move! Ryan, great goal! Did you see that? Bobby Ryan and the Senators are on the board.
And I know that's something that you're associated with. Do you remember the first time you dropped a did you see that, or is that more just a momentary thing that comes to you now and then? Or
well, I remember thinking of it and thinking, you know, that might be pretty good, and then you see the TSN top tens, and when they use it three or four times, I'm thinking, oh God, I got to come up with something different. I'll give you an example of when it's difficult, and if you're a Leaf fan, maybe you appreciate this. I mean, Connor McDavid, that goal McDavid scored, turning Morgan Riley inside out.
Oh, God.
I'm doing a Leaf broadcast, You know, I got excited, but I feel bad because I don't think I gave it the full Connor McDavid what he deserved.
Kerfoot's pass broken up, and look out, here he goes. Working against Riley. What a move. Look at that. Are you watching this? What a brilliant piece of work from Connor McDavid.
Wow.
His first goal in Toronto, and you'll remember that one.
Okay.
And I remember actually that night, I knew how great a goal it was, and I didn't want to say, did you see that? Because I didn't want to hear it over and over again.
Right.
And I kind of wish I did in that case, because that was one of the ultimate
unreal.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
But I was thinking too much. I was thinking, okay, he just scored against the Leafs on a Leaf regional. If it was a national game, I would have been out of the booth.
Right.
And I should have been out of the booth regardless. And sometimes we think too much, and I'll admit to you that that night I was kind of thinking about audience when I shouldn't have been. I should have been thinking that was just as special as it gets.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things, whether you're a Leaf fan or a Senators fan, that right now we are extremely lucky. I don't think anyone wanted to see, you know, outside of the Rogers family, TSN lose the national rights. But for those of us who are Leafs or Sens fans, suddenly we have, between you and Gord Miller, probably the two best play-by-play men currently in the business calling our regional games. That's hard to get too upset about or to complain about too much. The last thing I have for you here, I'd be remiss not to ask you, as the voice of the CFL, things are in a weird spot right now, and I'm not going to ask you to predict where a global pandemic is going to go, because I don't think any of us know. But what are your kind of thoughts right now on maybe the best foot forward for the CFL? We've seen them kind of reach out to the government, hoping to get a little bit of help. I got to think that playing in empty stadiums isn't a great option for that league, given how much they depend on the gate. What are your thoughts on the CFL right now, and you know, maybe what the best path forward is for them?
You know, I am worried because they need fans in the stands,
yeah.
and none of us know when that can happen. And it is a gate-driven league. They don't have the billion-dollar contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The TSN contract basically pays players' salaries,
right.
But it's so much more than that. And even what worries me the most is that it seems like on the surface, well, maybe they can play from Labor Day on, and they can play eight games, and you know, every team plays each other once.
Right.
And I think that would be legitimate. I mean, it wouldn't be much different than a U.S. college season for the number of games. But the problem is, I think as soon as they kick off and intend on playing a half a season, they guarantee themselves substantial losses.
Yeah.
And that is an issue that I'm concerned with. This league's always found a way. I called my first Grey Cup game in 1996, and more than a few people said, I'm glad you're getting to call one, but this is probably the last one because
wow.
The league's going under.
Jeez.
And I've always felt like the quality of the game and has helped pull this league through, and its significance in you know what it means in the Canadian fabric, and I'm hoping that's the case again. I understand anybody that doesn't want their tax dollars going to help, but
mm-hmm.
But if it dies, there's a lot of tax dollars that aren't going to be paid either,
and yeah.
And I'm worried about not just the players. I'm worried about, you know, I haven't heard enough people talking about the staff of
the ticket
of every
takers
team.
And
yeah,
the popcorn guys,
there's
and the
everybody.
Trainers and yeah,
there's everybody. And you know, I think they said last year's Grey Cup was worth $89 million in the economy of Calgary. Well, I would boldly predict it would be a lot more in Saskatchewan this year,
yep.
Because that province, when they the last one,
oh,
it was
the
just
best market,
completely
right?
off the hook. So,
yeah.
So I hope there's a way. And you know, this is unforeseen. This is it's always been tough. The economics of the league have not been easy. But there was a time when people said, no team can make money in the league, and now there's three or four that are making money. I think that there's two or three other teams that have sorted out their issues, like Montreal and Hamilton, and I think Vancouver's, BC's close. Toronto's still a big concern, yeah. But I hope that that this league can continue on, because I think prior to the pandemic, I think that the future was starting to look a little brighter than it had been in maybe the last 5-10 years, and it's just an unforeseen circumstance that's put it back on potentially the deathbed of the league. So it is certainly a cause for concern.
I got to tell you, this has been a real thrill for me. For our listeners out there, I've kept Chris far longer than I said I would, so I appreciate his patience. And
I'm sure I'm mostly to blame for that. nobody's ever not said I'm not long-winded. So anyway, great to talk to you, Matt. A pleasure, and hopefully we'll be back calling Senator games sooner rather than later.
There he is, the best in the business, Chris Cuthbert. We hope we can do this again with you down the road sometime. Thank you so much.
Be my pleasure. Thanks.
Man, that was a lot of fun for me. Like I said off the top, by far my favorite play-by-play guy ever. He can do it all. He's covered it all, and he ran us through a whole bunch of it there. Some of the things going through his mind for some of his more notable calls. That was a real thrill for me. I got to tell you guys, I've wanted to have Chris on the show for a long time. I just never really was sure when to reach out. And it's also, Chris doesn't have an off season, right? He's hockey October to May, and then the CFL is up and running. So he doesn't have a whole lot of time for stuff like this. And with everything shut down right now, I figured, you know what? I'm going to just take a shot at this. I'm going to send him an email. And so I did, and he responded within a day and said, sure, happy to do it. Just give me a time. To which I responded and said, why don't you give me a time? When Chris Cuthbert's willing to do your show, you clear your schedule. You make it work on his timeline. So he gave me a time within a day and sat down with us there for, man, it seemed like it's got to be almost an hour there. So that was awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I know I did. Just a really gracious guy, really humble guy, considering how good he is at his job and how long he's been doing it. It was great to spend a little bit of time with him. Even if he's not really much of a craft beer guy. We will wind this one down. Like I said, wherever you're listening to this, hit subscribe, whether it be on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. There's a follow button. There's a subscribe button, whatever it might be. Make sure you hit that. We're going to have more guests coming up for you, as well as our usual nonsense with Rob and Maddie and Amy and myself, the rest of the TCA crew here. We're going to keep stuff coming for you throughout this lockdown. No matter how long that lasts, we will continue to pump stuff out. We're on Twitter and Instagram at TallCanAudio, Facebook.com/TallCanAudio. My name's Matt Robinson. This has been Tall Can Sports, and we will catch you all on the next one.
We're not going to be fucking sunk this year! Yeah!
Thanks for listening. You can get more TCA at TallCanAudio.com or by searching Tall Can Audio on your favorite podcast app.